Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We discuss birds once a month or so. Rich Guthrie comes in and helps answer your questions about birds. He's a veteran birder, a one-time NCON specialist for many years, actually, and the compiler of the Catskill New York Christmas Bird Count for a long time for the National Audubon Society. Rich is our resident expert. The number to call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also go to Facebook, WAMC Radio. You'll find a Vox Pop post there. You can comment that way or go to our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. There's a spot where you can type in your comments for all to see. You can tweet us at WAMCVoxPop or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But we do love to hear from you over the phone. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Rich, nice to have you back on the show.
Nice to be here.
So we were kind of getting philosophical in the break.
Yes.
You know, we have the CNN on and the different news channels on.
Oh, yes.
And it's just one
heavy
horrible
stuff,
story after
stuff.
Another. And you made an interesting point about why you like to go birding.
Well, yeah. It's an opportunity to just get out and put things into perspective, a little bit of reality, calm, comforting. And a touch with nature, which can't hurt. It can help.
And it's nice to be away from devices. We are all tethered to devices and connected to every other person on the planet 24/7, whether we like it or not. And it's nice to get rid of that leash.
Oh, yeah? That doesn't happen
well,
out
you
there
bring
in
it
this
with you?
World.
Oh. Oh, I'm
we got all our high tech.
So you bring it with you, huh?
Absolutely. You don't want to miss out on a rare bird showing up someplace, and you want to be on top of it. You know, take advantage of it, put it to good use. I love that stuff.
I thought you were a purist.
Well, there's an on-off switch to that, too, but you don't want to be really the serious birder wants to be aware and be online and LinkedIn.
Well, I suppose that time that you allegedly saw the extremely rare and possibly extinct woodpecker.
Yes, the ivory-billed woodpecker.
Had you had
Arkansas,
your camera, you would have been set.
Oh, the camera was there. I had the camera there.
So what happened?
It was at my hip. I had it on a tether at my hip. And
so this is what happens when people see UFOs. They forget that they have the camera, and then...
Well, that wasn't that. I had to make a weighted decision. The bird flew. And I knew that if I stayed still, well, I thought that it might just light on a tree and wait for me to take its picture. I figured that if I moved around and reached for the camera while it was flying,
yeah,
it would just keep on going. I would just incentivize it.
But it did anyway.
It did. I took a calculated risk that it might stop. I felt that if I reached for the camera, it would keep going. If I didn't reach for the camera, it might stop.
But it didn't.
It kept on going anyway.
Well, the fickle finger of fate once again.
I agree. I mean, I'd like to replay that tape and do it over again, but, you know, it's
That's all right. I believe you.
Oh, thank you.
But I'm in the minority, obviously.
There are a few out there.
Oh,
and
right.
They seem to be getting to be fewer and fewer. However, as time goes on without further evidence, and, you know, unfortunately, I think I did see one of the last... Or the last one.
You never know.
Creatures. Well, I know. It's been reclusive for all these many years, and it could still be out there lurking or hiding or just evading observation.
That happens all the time around the world. You find something that you thought was gone, and it's there.
Yeah. Well, this one, there was such a concerted effort to relocate it. There's so many people down there that are now aware of it, the locals who are out in the woods on a daily basis. And, you know, you hope that it is just evading, but it was, you have to think that there may have been one or two left.
Well.
And, you know, magic needs to happen for them to be more than one or two after that.
Yeah. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. And, Rich, I tell you, the lines are loaded. If you have a busy signal and you're trying to call the show, just wait until we hang up with someone and then try it again. Let's start it off with Chris in Walker Valley. Now, Chris, I got to say, Rich and I have never heard of Walker Valley. Where is Walker Valley?
Walker Valley is a tiny little town in southwestern Ulster County.
Southwestern Ulster County. I love it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you got hilly ground around you.
Yes, I do. We're right at the base of the mountain.
Yes, okay.
What's on your mind, Chris?
I have a ordinary, boring bird question. I have, for the first time in, I'd say, 30 years, I have no house sparrows at my feeder. And I was wondering if there's something going on with them.
Well, some people will say, count your blessings.
Yeah, no, I realize that, but they're just I actually keep records. And
yeah, good for you.
And it hit me a couple days ago that I haven't seen a single one this season, and that's very unusual for here.
Well, you are among a minority out there. I think the house sparrows are doing quite well in many locales. I don't think we're having any problem with their population.
They're a nuisance.
Well, yeah, to some. And I see some very clever comments out there from people who appreciate house sparrows. The house sparrow is what we used to call an English sparrow back in the day.
It was brought here.
It was introduced here, yes.
Right. Yeah.
And then has done very well. I think England would like to have a few of them back, thank you, because
yeah.
They are having a problem over in the UK.
No kidding.
They are. There's apparently been a decline in their numbers and distribution over there.
Really?
And they're trying to figure out what that's all about. But as far as
we're
concerned...
I have no shortage of starlings. Well, they can have them back, too.
Well, okay. And and some will say the pigeons. But in any event, I would say that it's just probably a temporary local phenomenon that you're witnessing there. And maybe they just moved back to the city.
Yeah, okay, all right. I just thought maybe there was something going on with them because for as long as I can remember, they've been one of the prominent birds. Hmm.
Not to my knowledge, and I can vouch for my own observations. I'm not noticing that. But, you know, that brings up an interesting point where folks can get involved and help monitor these sorts of trends in the population dynamics, and that is through eBird, the Cornell site, eBird.org, or through the we just completed this year's seasonal Christmas bird counts, where
yes,
we go
I
out.
I always hear you talk about that.
Yes, well, the data will be online pretty soon so that it can be reviewed to see if there's kind of a trend happening with house sparrows around.
So if Chris wanted to, he could go to eBird.org and make a report?
Absolutely. Anybody can. And in fact, folks are encouraged to do that. Because
I am one of the very few that are not hooked up.
Oh, okay.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Way to go.
Yeah. Someday.
Well, I'll tell you what. You call it in here. We'll talk about it, and more people will be informed from your perspective. How's that?
All right, Rich. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Stay the course, Chris.
I love the show. All right. Bye-bye.
Yep. Stay unhooked up. I like that.
Oh.
You know what? I'm a dinosaur. I wish I never got that internet thing.
Well, we're there now, though.
I know.
And
there's no putting the genie back in the bottle, is there?
Well, you see, the thing is, it's a magical genie, and it's sharing. There's so much more information floating around. Good information and bad information, but it's all, you know.
The radio's all you need. Public radio is all you need, Rich.
Okay.
The fun drive is coming up. Toe the line.
And we just had that.
All right, fair enough. Let's go to Lauren in Sandusfield, Mass. Lauren, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am wondering if birds need to drink. I have feeders out, but I'm wondering with it being so cold and frozen, do they need to drink and
how
do they do it?
Well, they do. Yes, absolutely. However, they've been around. They've figured out a few tricks in order to get replenish, hydrate. One of them is just chewing on snow. Grab a mouthful of snow and chomp away, and there you go.
Okay.
Easy
well,
pickings.
There's plenty of that.
Yes, and they also get the liquid needs through the food that they eat, either berries that are out there or insects that they might find. So it's not the same as going to the fridge and getting a nice cold glass of water, but they have their ways.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks,
sure,
Lauren.
Thanks.
Let's go over to Arlene in Richmond, Mass. Arlene, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Referring to the second caller, I don't have any English sparrows this year, and it's very strange because I'm always fighting the battle with the English sparrows. However, I seem to be fighting a battle with what looks like yellow finches.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're here in the winter, but they're gluttons, and they sit right in the feeder, and they eat, and they husk the shells and leave it in the feeder. whereas the chickadees take the seed and fly to a tree and then peck the inside out.
Yep, you're right about that.
So how can I get rid of these things?
Well, I don't know that I wouldn't want. I have them. These are what I presume you're seeing are the goldfinches.
Yeah.
And they're nature's little alchemists out there. Right now they have this kind of a dull greenish gold coloration to them.
Right.
And in a short few months, oh, it seems like far off, but
yeah,
they'll
it does.
Be there. They will turn to the brilliant, bright, lemon yellow, sunshine, dandelion color gold. And they're delightful little guys. Now, as far as being at the feeders, well, you can offer them thistle seed that will get their attention to another feeder. Or you can arrange the sunflower in a different kind of feeder that's more difficult for them to access.
How would you do that? Well, give me a quick example how you might make it a little more difficult for them to get...
By the design of the bird feeder, let's
right.
say.
Yeah, how one would you
One that has
one?
A small gap in it that the chickadees can get into, but too small for the goldfinches to get at. A little, there are bird feeders out there that are designed just for that reason, just to make it more accessible to chickadees and less so for larger birds.
Okay.
And I have one other quick question.
Sure.
I have chickens, and before it snowed, the ground was bare, but it was frozen. So I threw out some scratch feed for the chickens, which they ate. And the next day, a murder of crows came to the same spot and cleaned up what was left from the chickens. And now I put out more scratch feed. And the crow, the murder, came again today.
Well, they found you.
What is the favorite food of crows? Because I love them, and I love seeing them.
Well, so it seems to me like you got their recipe down pat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chicken scratch, cracked corn, or you could use whole kernels or other food types. I take suet, and I chunk it up and send it out there for the crows. And they come down, they love me for it.
All
beef
right.
soup.
Arlene, we got to take a break here, but thank you very much for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Rich Guthrie is our guest. We talk birds once a month, and today is the day, first one of the year. 1-800-348-2551. More coming up.
Support comes from Mohonk Preserve, New Paltz, presenting the Rock the Ridge 50-Mile Challenge for runners, walkers, hikers on May 2nd, sponsored by I Love New York and Ulster County Alive. MohonkPreserve.org for registration. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. And Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors. EmpireExhibits.com.
Here we are on the Bird Show. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551. The very popular Rich Guthrie is here. And here's a couple from email. Mr. Rich says, "Hi, Rich," parentheses, Ray, as well.
Oh, well.
I guess that's
hi back.
Parenthetically, hi back. I'm going to read this as written. Is extreme winter temps the suspect for the wreck of Cassin's auklets off the Oregon coast? I've also read necropsies showed malnutrition. Your thoughts?
Interesting question. The West Coast, yes, you're right. There has been a crash of auklets, both Cassin's and some of the others.
What do you mean a crash?
A population plunge.
Okay, I didn't see this in the news. Explain.
A number of these small seabirds have been washing up on the shore.
Oh, really?
Yes, and they're tiny little guys. So they're often described as a flying football, about the size of a football or smaller.
Really?
And they live their life out at the ocean. They nest on land on the West Coast, but they spend the winters out at sea, out of sight of land for the most part.
So they've been dying in big
numbers?
There has
been, yes. There has been a there has been a huge number of them that have been turning up. And the reason why, I don't know that we know yet. And there's been a lot of speculation. There has been a similar event, catastrophe occurring on the Atlantic coast as well within the last few years. And the speculation is that it has something to do with food supply. Usually that is the cause.
What do they eat in general?
Fish? Small fish.
Yeah.
Krill, small fish. And a lot of times that is temperature dependent.
Ah.
And while the jury is still out, there is serious investigation of what might be going on with regard to that. And not only on the West Coast, but on the East Coast. And so we don't know. But there is happening. The
okay.
Cassin's Auklet and on the East Coast, the Razorbill has been experiencing these sorts of troubles.
Well, Bonnie, thank you for that email. We appreciate it. The email address here is voxpop@wamc.org. Here's another one. A quick question, the apparent lack of migration. Walking around Olana recently, I saw a bluebird, and this morning I saw geese heading south. What's up with that? Thanks and Happy New Year, Nick writes.
Thank you and Happy New Year.
Yeah.
The bluebirds actually winter here. They don't, some of them migrate, but most of them stick around. And what they do is they become more reclusive. They go away from the backyard, more or less.
Yeah.
And they find a sheltered area where there's out of the harsh winter weather and an available food supply, usually on the leeward side of a hill or a mountain or a valley or a vale,
okay.
And feast on grapes and bittersweet and sumac berries through the winter. And whatever insects might be foolish enough to be flying around in this type of weather.
Okay.
Which
but
does happen.
The geese heading south?
Nothing to it. They're
okay.
Just moving around. There has been a freeze up north that's pushed a lot of the lingerers up there, kicking them out, and they will move through. But there is always that permanent or year-round population of geese that we now have. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
They just shift commuting back and forth.
So there was a freeze up north, and now it's here. So they would have to go to Cuba.
They're still moving,
yeah.
Yes.
All right, let's go to Cedric in Kingston. Cedric, you're on.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I was reading a John Burroughs essay recently,
mm-hmm.
And he said that like when woodpeckers are really making like a loud noise against like a hollow piece of wood, that they're actually just using it as a call, maybe like a mating call or something.
Yeah.
But when they're looking for insects, they're barely making any sound at all.
That's right.
Is that true?
Yes, and it's kind of a fun thing to tune into. It's their song. They're percussionists, and
yeah.
And you can tell some of them by the tempo, by the beat. There's a group of them out there that are very similar, and some people say they can tell them apart by the drum. I don't know. I think it's 50-50 guess.
You mean which species of?
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, some of them have very distinctive drumming.
Okay, so it's not based on how desperate they are.
Maybe
rapid
a little
tempo.
Louder.
God, it's been a while.
Find a new drum.
No. And they'll hit flashing and everything else, right?
Yes. They find something that resonates, they'll go to it, and they'll reuse it and reuse it. Makes them king of the hill, and they love it.
Okay.
And so do the gals.
Okay. So Burroughs was right.
Yeah. I have one more question with regarding Burroughs. He put out like he said he would nail a bone to a tree to attract birds.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good method, or would that like attract bears and other rodents and things?
Well, it'll attract an interesting variety of stuff that will come.
Yeah.
But there are better ways to attract birds. And it's an interesting thing. I think, you know, birds, if depends on the bone. If there's some marrow in there, it will be a huge attraction.
Right.
But if just a dry bone, I can't imagine what birds would be interested in that.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, sure.
Thanks a lot for the call. Interesting call. Let's go over to Saul in Schenectady. Saul, you're on.
Hi. My son's a bird watcher, lives in Springfield, Mass. And he already has a real good pair of binoculars and a really good camera. I'm wondering what kind of gift would be a good one for him.
Well, you know, that's a very good question. I like that because is he a member of the Mass Audubon Society?
Or
the
he is.
At the National Audubon.
I don't know about that, but I know he's a member of the Mass one.
Okay. Well, that's a good possibility. Perhaps one of the local Hoffman Bird Club or the bird clubs in Central Mass and Springfield area. That That would be my suggestion. And there are a number of good books that are out there that can be acquired, some new ones that are out, perhaps some of the new apps. Sorry, Ray, but there are some nice apps that are available for iPhones or iPads that you can bring out in the field and use to learn and also to record bird sightings. So some of the thoughts that come to mind, but I like the idea of membership in one of the support organizations, Nature Conservancy, or perhaps one of the land trusts in the area that help for exposure and perhaps the opportunity to meet up with other birders or outdoor enthusiasts, as well as supporting an effort for habitat conservation and information.
Okay.
Well, that's great. Can you recommend one app? He's definitely a techie.
Off the top of my BirdLog.
BirdLog.
BirdLogNA for North America.
Right.
That will gain access to eBird. You can enter data right from the field. Or BirdPro, BirdPro.
All right.
And I'll come up with another one as soon as I look at my phone here and see
during
the icon.
During the next break, you can do that.
I can do that.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call,
so
Saul.
Stay tuned.
We appreciate that. You know, when you're looking at stars, there are a couple of great apps where you can hold up your iPhone or whatever.
Yes.
And it'll tell you what constellation you're looking at and what planets are there.
Agreed.
It'd be great if they had, if now that they have all this facial recognition software and everything else, if you could hold it up and it would tell you what bird you're looking at.
Well, there are some out there that will help you identify the bird if you go through the selection of descriptions.
Okay.
And it will tell you, you know, big bird, red bird, small bird, brown bird.
Yeah,
and
right.
You could work your way down through
but still,
sorting it out.
You can't just hold one up and have a picture and say, this is likely what it is.
Not yet.
Okay, let's develop that. Let's go over to Charles in Lenox, Mass. Charles.
Yes, I live in Lenox in Massachusetts, in the Berkshires, at the edge of a fairly lengthy, large amount of woods behind my house. And at my feeder, I have lots of white-breasted nuthatches, but to my knowledge, I have never seen a red-breasted nuthatch, and I'm wondering about if they even exist around here in the Berkshires. And I have a similar question about the existence of ravens or not. I see lots of crows, and maybe I saw one raven, but I'm not even sure about that.
Thanks. Okay. Well, the first part, the nuthatches, the white-breast is a local, fairly familiar nuthatch species. The other one, the red-breasted nuthatch, lives elsewhere. And they come in on occasion when there's what we call an eruption of the bird species. For whatever reason, they come in as a sort of like a tidal surge into the area.
Where do they usually reside?
Just north of us.
Okay.
And in fact, I'm surprised at some of the higher elevations in the Berkshires and the Green Mountains, the Adirondacks and the Catskills, that they would nest in the higher elevations. But primarily, they're swept right across the taiga of Canada. And they and some of the other northern species will just kind of have a mass movement into the area. So we could go from 0 to 60 in a month, and that could still happen through the course of this winter. But and some of them are on the verge at the threshold, at the doorstep of our area. The red poles are beginning to show up, and siskins are beginning to show up. But for the most part, it's been a quiet northern species incursion year.
Okay.
And as far as the ravens, they're there. They're there. And if they're not there, come down to my way, because the raven is a remarkable story of a comeback story. The first one I've seen in this area years and years ago was right there in the Berkshires. I was on the Mass Pike traveling east, and sure enough, there was one right overhead. Now they're all over the place, it seems, nesting in the Hudson Valley of New York and down, in fact, even into New York City, where they're nesting in Queens and Long Island. So the raven has made a major comeback. I would say that they're out there. Watch these days now. They start their courtship, which is a magnificent thing to watch. They are masters in the air. They're just aerobatic flyers.
Okay. And thank you very much, Charles. Now, for those of us who aren't quite familiar with the difference, ravens are much larger. And if you could do the difference in the sound, that would be great.
Well, we have – it's a crow.
Okay. It's a crow. And a crow sounds like?
A crow sounds like, ah, ah,
Okay, and then the raven sounds like.
Raven, the other crow we have is the fish crow.
Yeah.
That's the little guy that just recently moved in from New York City and New Jersey. And they're usually pretty quiet, but we have plenty of them around. But they, you know, if you don't hear them, you won't be able to tell them. Really, can't tell them apart.
Okay.
But the raven, the big guy, they have the long, narrower wing and a long beak on them, a real schnoz, and a long, tapered tail, and a deep voice. A wonderful. It's actually highly variable, but it usually travels a long way. Goes like. And that croak, that deep guttural croak, will travel for a mile in the air. And I've heard them, and I've known to go out and look for them. I pick them up on my baby room monitor that I have outside.
Yeah.
I pick them up, and I know to go outside and look for them. I can't find them. They're so far away, but they're out there.
Well, you know, if you come into the station, you'll hear a lot of ravens right after lunchtime.
Or if the coffee's not ready. Yeah,
exactly. Let's go over to Sydney in Hatfield. Sydney, you're on.
Oh, thank you. I was just wondering, when you think you saw the ivory-billed woodpecker, where you were.
Oh, it's not thinking I saw it, but I'll tell you where I was.
Were you in Arkansas?
I was. I was in northeast Arkansas at Bayou de Vieux. That's sure. Near Hinckley, Arkansas, or Brinkley, uh-huh. Brinkley, Arkansas. And I recommend, if somebody wants to go down there and have a look, feel free.
I had a friend who went and tried to find it, and she didn't get to see it. But
well, she's not alone.
This was several years ago, and they were still reporting occasional sightings.
Back in 2007, as I recall.
So not that long ago.
No, it's not.
Right.
You know, there's an interstate highway that runs right through the heart of that territory that I was describing. And, anything could happen. I hate to think of it, but it's very possible.
Right.
But I will say that the view I had of this thing here was... was uncluttered, was clear, and it's, in terms of bird sightings, it's concerned. It was a leisurely, lengthy view.
So you're 100% positive.
Oh, absolutely. I made some sketches in the field. I didn't have the camera, but I immediately made some sketches.
Yeah.
And remarkably enough, I hadn't seen this in one of the sketch, but it was identical. And this was without prompting, without resource investigation, identical to one of the older sketches that had been made years ago. And it was just not more. It was more than a coincidence. So,
okay.
I have no doubt in my head.
Oh, good. Well, I believe you. I had another quick question. Do you know if there's another snowy owl eruption this winter, like last winter?
I've heard
there might be. But.
Well, there is in a minor sense. There an echo flight, as some people call it. And usually after we have a massive eruption like we had last year, unprecedented, I think, in with respect to recent times, usually after we have a flight like that, there is an echo flight with some not quite to the numbers that we experienced last year. But yes, there are snowy owls around, more so than normal, but not quite anywhere near last year's numbers.
Okay. Thank you so much for both those answers.
You're quite welcome.
Sydney. Now, why would there be an echo flight?
Because it's a stabilization process. The owls are responding to food supply up north, and apparently there is still a scarcity of food. The lemming of vole population hasn't recovered yet, and so they're still out looking for lunch.
All right, we have time to take at least one more before the next break. Let's go to Anthony in South Hadley, Massachusetts. Anthony.
Hello, Ray.
Hello.
And Rich, too.
Hi.
A couple of quick notes for you. One of your listeners has been asking about water in the winter. We have a relatively low-cost heated bird bath.
Oh, yes,
right.
Use
a lot of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to meet the necessities around here. And I to switch to the apps, pardon me, Ray, the Lab of Ornithology.
I have a lot of apps, too. I'm only kidding around.
You have a bad aptitude, yes.
Yes.
I know,
hey.
The Lab of O at Cornell has recently released a free app called Merlin, which is quite good.
There you go, right.
And I think that in the fall, Rich, there's often a winter finch forecast published based on the kinds of seed crops up north, and that's primarily for redpolls and things, but I think they sometimes lump the red-breasted nuthatches in with that, if I understand that.
Yes, and that comes out each fall from Ontario, Canada.
Yeah.
I forget the source of it up there, but in any event, yes, you're right. And they include things like the red-breasted nuthatch and siskins and evening grosbeaks and both species of crossbill, where they just sort of project based on field analysis of the food available up there and say, okay, good food supply, nobody's going anywhere. They're all going to stay home.
Right.
Scarce supply, stand by, there might be a movement.
And one last comment, your most recent question about the snowy owls. There's a very interesting, again, pardon me, Ray, there's a website called Project Snowstorm.
Yes.
Has looked at these the recent eruptions, and that's quite interesting with tracking data and so forth. So
yes, very good, Anthony. That's a very good point. The they put satellite receivers, transmitters, trackers, trackers on snowy owls and watch their movements. And it's fascinating to see where snowy owls go to. The ones on Lake Champlain, Lake Ontario, for example, spent a good part of the winter out on the ice, feeding near open water, feeding on ducks that might have been swimming around. In
delicious.
You know, sort of like polar bears and the with seals.
Yes. Well, Anthony, thanks a lot. It was a real good call,
thank
Anthony. Appreciate
thank
it very
you very much, and enjoy the show. Bye now.
Thanks very much.
We're going to take a break here. Rich Guthrie is here, and you're there, and I'm here. And we'll take some more calls. Maybe. We'll come back anyway. We'll do some underwriting now. All right, Zach? And then we'll come back, and then we'll do some more of the show.
Support comes from Edward Garbasek, certified financial planner serving all of Western Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. Ed at HavikinWealthStrategies.com. Fleury Lumber, Route 10 East Hampton, providing advice and assistance for projects small and large. Items such as Benjamin Moore paints, hardwood flooring, Anderson windows, Trex decking, tools, lumber, hardware. FleuryLumber.com. And the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974. PreserveNYS.org.
Hey, you know what starts early in February, first Monday in February? I'll give you a hint. It's the Fun Drive. And we need your help to keep this station going. If you're a Rich Guthrie fan, we look for you to step up to the plate on Monday. I think February 2nd is the beginning of the drive. Or you can go now to WAMC.org and feed the lockbox. Every pledge that we get between now and the start of the drive counts on day one of the Fun Drive, and we can shorten that drive quite a bit. Get back to more programming with the famous Rich Guthrie. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. It occurs to me, Rich, they do all these Christmas bird counts and they bird census and everything else. How many bird watchers are there in the country?
Lots and lots and lots.
Well, that's not very, really answer my
it's
question.
It's kind of like a hard question to answer because you have to define what you mean by birdwatcher.
Do they ever have eruptions where birdwatchers move around?
Absolutely. In fact, there's one coming up. Thanks for you for the opening.
That's what I do.
Yes. Cornell University and the National Audubon Society in February, usually I think it's around the President's Day weekend, might stay tuned for that, has what's called a Great Backyard Bird Count. And this is when at-home bird watchers go out and look out their window and check their feeders and their backyard, and perhaps some will go to a favorite patch or park or sanctuary and tally up the birds. This is a user-friendly live interaction website where you can put down your robins and bluebirds and blue jays and red-breasted nuthatches and enter them in, and you'll see a global image of where these things are.
Okay.
Apps.
Explain to me how one counts birds when you don't know if you're counting the same bird seven times.
Well, you count it once, and if you see another one, you sort of...
At the same time?
At the same time. You see two of them, you know there's two.
Because they look pretty much alike.
They do. And one of the rules, let's say, of watching the birds at the feeder is don't count them as they come and go. Count them when you see the most of them at one time. So you see a chickadee or two chickadees, that's two.
Okay.
Not and they come back again, that's not four, that's still two. But if you see eight at once, well, you got eight. You know that much.
Well, that's okay. That's how you do it. What if it's a solitary bird species that there aren't a lot of? Maybe there's 50 of them, but they show up one at a time. You still have to count as one.
That's
there's
right.
a flaw in the system,
that,
Rich.
No question about it. But you know what? It's a consistent flaw, so that it's a variable that you can predict and work with. Statisticians know how to do that stuff.
All right. How would people find out more about this?
It would be go to the Cornell website, and that would be Cornell Lab of Ornithology, and go there. It'll be up in National Audubon, audubon.org will bring that to you.
All right.
Or your local bird club, Hudson Mohawk Bird Club or Allen DeVoe Bird Club. Just Google them on the internet, and they will provide lots of local information for participation.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. We go to Claire in Albany. Claire, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I feed the crows, the squirrels, the birds, and I feed them every day. I make a huge bowl of popcorn with raisins and nuts and et cetera.
Oh, I'll be over.
That sounds delicious.
Anyway, yesterday I happened to look out of my kitchen window, and there was this beautiful brown bird. I thought it was a hawk. And he was eating along with the squirrels and the crows. And I ran to get my camera, but by the time I found the damn thing, it was gone.
Nice. Thanks for that.
Yeah. He was like 3 inches off the ground. He had big legs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So could you tell me what you think it is?
I think you're right. I think it was a hawk.
And he just hangs out with the squirrels?
Well, no.
What kind of a fantasy land are we living in now?
No, it's the truth.
Really?
And they tolerated him. I couldn't believe it.
Well, I'm thinking it might have been a... And you are in the...
South end of Albany.
Okay.
And it wasn't a pigeon. It was...
No, it wasn't a pigeon.
Okay.
I get very few pigeons now. I wish I got more, but...
Oh, no. Don't say that.
So is that common for this to happen, Rich?
No, it's not common. In fact, but birds and animals have a way of knowing when a predator is on the prowl. And there's sort of a stand down. I've seen birds right next to hawks and eagles relaxed because the eagle is not hunting or the hawk is not hungry, and they sense it. Of course, they got one eye carefully watching.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, and I'm wondering what this bird was doing. Was it actively feeding on something down
yes,
there?
Yes, it was eating. I had some old bread that I put peanut butter on. And I threw that loaf out. Boy,
yeah.
They were having a ball yesterday.
Well, they love their peanut butter. And, you know, I think any smart bird will not pass up an easy, nutritious meal.
Well,
so,
good.
But wouldn't the squirrels be an easier meal for a nice hawk?
Yeah, but they fight back. I mean, what's a peanut butter
terrible.
Sandwich going to do?
They're hogs, you know.
Yes.
They take over. Anyway, I'm so happy to hear all the lovers of crows. I, too, am one of them.
Well, I'm with you there.
Thank you for taking my call.
Love
Claire,
it, Claire,
thanks a lot
Thank
for
you.
The call. Happy New Year. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And Michelle in Mount Tremper. Michelle, you're on.
Hi, Rich. Thank you so much, you guys, for having this show. Rich, I have some exciting news. I heard a symphony the other night, or I should say a duet, between two owls, and they were really close to my house. And at first, it scared me to death because it just felt ominous.
Mm-hmm.
But it went on for hours, till 2 o'clock in the morning. And I Googled it, and I want you to speak to this. It said something about they do that because this is their mating ground.
Absolutely.
Fascinating. The next day, I'm coming home early in the morning, and my friend said, oh, my God, I think I saw an owl. And we backed up, and I swear to you, we were 10 feet away from this beautiful, I think, barred owl. There was another one that looked just like it, and I wasn't sure if those were around here because I didn't really look that up. But is that what they do? Are they mating? Or
well, it's a territorial and courtship call, and that's what they're doing. They're calling back and forth, and they're either trying to attract the gal or kick out some rival male. And the likelihood is that they are barred owls. In Mount Tremper, in the Catskill Mountains there, there's a healthy population of barred owls.
And was it odd that I saw them in the daytime?
Not at all. If you're going to see an owl during the daytime, the snowy owl and the barred owl are the two most likely candidates. Doing our Christmas bird count north of you the other day, we did see a barred owl right out there in the middle of the day. Mm. They sit quietly, motionlessly, and just observing. They're the most wonderful thing to just see. And the thing about barred owls, too, is that they have a wonderful voice. And if Ray will bear with me.
I love this.
Oh, goody.
Yes. Oh, this is great. All right. Sit back and relax, Michelle. Here we go.
Well, no, this is just a recollection. And for other folks who are out there that might tell the difference between the barred and the great horned owl.
Yeah.
The barred owl has that "who cooks for you? Who cooks for you all?" type of song. And it goes like, "whoo, whoo, whoo, whoo."
Okay, now that's a chimpanzee, all right? All right.
Yeah, they do a better chimpanzee call. They go into a fanatical call. It goes, they go
folks,
on,
wish
and
you
that's
see
the
what
scary
I'm seeing
part.
Here because the view is phenomenal. I got to be honest with you. All right.
And the great horned owl has that sort of a different tempo.
And what does the barred owl do? All right, Michelle, the whole show is now going to hell. So thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it.
All that jazz,
I'm glad
Ray.
I inspired that symphony here. Thank you, Dan.
Have a happy new year and appreciate the call. Oh, the fun we have with Rich Guthrie. I got to tell you, let's go over to Lynn in Shelburne. Lynn, you're on.
Oh, my gosh, that was beautiful.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
I like it, too. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I saw a bobcat passing through my yard a couple days ago. And I'm wondering if they're dangerous to my birds. I've got a lot of squirrels, which I'd like to get rid of.
Well, they could go either way. They eat, and wildcats, bobcats are on part of our natural environment out there. And
They're beautiful.
They are. And you're very fortunate that you have some in your vicinity.
Well, I have one. The animal control guy said it's one on each side of the river. And it's like a needle in a haystack that comes from my yard.
Okay. So. Well, on a nice snowy morning, you might go out and look for the tracks and see just where he's been, what he's been up to. And
he wasn't afraid of me either. I went out there. I was like, I'll see, like 30 feet away. And he was sitting on the knoll, and he looked back at me.
Maybe he's just reading the menu.
No big deal.
Reading the menu. So if there's only one, it's not going to be a huge threat to the birds, though, right?
Oh, no. But be honest, they do eat, they do prey on birds, usually the larger ones, like the ruffed grouse or perhaps some turkey poults or the like. And
what about squirrels?
Oh, sure. If it could grab a squirrel, it will. And but again, these are the natural native cats to our area. A far cry from the feral cats that plague some of our parks and neighborhoods, where their numbers are way outnumber beat out the population of songbirds that are in the yard.
So, yes, boy. So. One more, Ray, please.
Sure.
Shoot.
That's all right.
I think it worth so much.
Well, all the sound effects tend to.
I love those.
Scatter your mind. Yeah, that's okay. All right. Well, Lynn, you call back. Well,
so what's their favorite prey? Oh, that's right. I have cats. Okay. Would they pick on a cat?
Sure.
Oh, I was hoping they were the same species, and they went.
No.
What's the favorite prey of the bobcat?
Yeah, and would a house cat, a roaming house cat, do?
Get
yes.
Be prey. Be you know.
Yes.
Okay. Kill to the
yes.
Bobcat.
Right.
Well, now we got that.
Fair game.
Thank you, Lynn. We appreciate the call. A little off topic now. I didn't know you knew so much about bobcats.
Well, I love bobcats. I think they're terrific little creatures.
Oh.
Big cats.
Hey, let's go to Judy in Chatham Center. Hi, Judy.
Hey, Rich. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Rich, I have this bird, this red-bellied, I think, woodpecker. It has a beautiful red head and then black and white wings.
Mm-hmm.
He's hanging around, or some like him have been hanging around for a few years, but suddenly the other day, by luck, I had my camera on the tripod right outside, opposite the bird, the feeder, And all of a sudden, this bird started snapping at all the other birds that came to the feeder. It's a pretty big feeder. I had never seen this before. He just kept snapping and snapping. I have this all on pictures.
Oh, cool.
I was using sports setting, and I'm just looking at it now, and his little beak went, and all the other birds would flutter away, even the big crows. So have you heard of that?
Well, no, but individual birds have their own personalities, and some species have their own as well. Some birds are more aggressive, some birds are more tolerant, some are sociable, some are solitary.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same holds true for individuals, just like with people, pets, and wildlife. Mm. So the natural inclination for the woodpecker is to be laissez-faire, let it be. On the other hand...
that's what I thought. But this time, he didn't want to share the feeder with anybody.
Well, that was his mood that morning.
Yeah.
Okay, good. But he's very beautiful, so I didn't want to disparage him on air. But anyway, thank you.
Maybe you could send some pictures to Rich. You could put them on the blog.
I was just going to suggest that. In fact, I do the blog in the Albany Times Union. And in fact, my next issue, I'm going to invite folks to share photos that they wouldn't mind seeing with credit on the blog that we can talk about. And I'd love to be able to do that. You can send them to me. My email address, a lot of fun, it's my name. Richard P.
Okay, I think I can figure that out.
Okay. Richard P. Guthrie at gmail.com.
And how do we spell Guthrie, just to be clear?
G-U-T-H-R-I-E.
All right.
And the middle initial is P, as in Peter.
Okay, all right.
Thanks,
Judy.
Got it.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Okay, Judy. Thank you.
And Happy New Year to you. Let's go over to Teresa in Port Jervis. Teresa, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Thank you so much. I have to tell you, about 15 years ago, I was at home raising my child, looking out of my front window, and we're on 10 acres, and I saw this gigantic woodpecker. So I ran to the Audubon Society book that my grandmother had given me that has a copyright date of like 1937. So I opened up, and it has some color plates in it. So I opened up, went through that, and this woodpecker was really taking its time on a big giant tree that we had that was kind of dying. So you could tell there were bugs in it or whatever it liked. Anyway, long story short, I opened up the book, and at that point in time, you know, in the 1930s, it said this particular woodpecker was endangered, and if you saw one, to call the Audubon Society. So I called the Audubon Society, and they said, oh, great try, but you're looking at a 1930s book, and sorry to say they're endangered. And I kept looking at this picture and looking at this bird, which was practically pointing at itself, saying, look at me. And I was thinking, no, you're wrong. I'm seeing this bird. And they're like, yeah, no, but, you know, thanks for the try. So you gave me so much hope when you said you saw one, too, because all those years I thought, are my observation skills that far off? But it gives me hope that maybe the birds are still out there, and that I'm not crazy. So thanks for that.
Was this somewhere around here?
Yeah, it was. It was springtime, and I live over in Greenville and Orange County, and we're very wooded where we are. And it was just this big, gigantic woodpecker that when I opened up that book, it was an ivy that had this big white, and it's not like crystal white, but it's kind of a creamy white, looking a little dirty snow white beak. It was amazing.
What do you think, Rich?
Well, Teresa, I hate to be... I hate to do this, but I'm going to go with the Audubon people.
Well, wait a minute. You're in the same boat, and people don't listen to you.
Hey, that's the way it is. However, I was in Arkansas, in the swamps of Arkansas. I don't think they've ever, Teresa, I love you, but I don't think they've ever been recorded. Even back in 1937 when that book was written, and back when Audubon was walking around the swamps, did this bird occur in New York State?
Well, that's not very nice.
It's place. Well,
you know, you ask people to believe you.
Teresa
has a perfectly described bird. Could there be something else that looks just like it?
Yes. The pileated woodpecker. But I know Teresa has been through this conversation with the Audubon people.
Yes, I have. yes. Right. I was like, no, it's not it, really.
I know.
And that was, it was kind of before that iPhone came on board. Man, if I had that iPhone, yeah. I would have been, I'd have taken that picture.
Well, I'm going to suggest Ray's advice, and that is get the picture.
You know what, Teresa? I believe you, and I'm disappointed in Rich for not listening to you and not believing you, even though he had the same issue when he saw the same bird.
Teresa, I want to believe you.
You know what, Teresa? He means well. He's trying to be nice, and I apologize for Rich.
Well, I thank you for taking the call, and you know what? I'm going to consider it you guys a beacon of hope, regardless of regardless of whether it's substantiated or not. I know what I saw.
Atta girl.
Thank you so much.
Get a picture.
Thanks, Teresa, for the call, and Rich, you should be ashamed of yourself. She saw that. She saw the.
I want to be there, but okay. I can't.
All right. Well, maybe there was an eruption, and the two that were left came to New York.
I'm going to call my friends up in Orange County and tell them that it's possible that they have one in their backyard, that they should get out there. Speaking of which, we had a very rare bird show up, first time ever in New York State, right there in Orange County, in Rockland County, New York.
That's a good save. Now, you put a good spin on it. Cara. But we're done now.
Cara.
And so you ended it, maybe not on that disgraceful note, but on a positive note.
Find that Cara. Get a picture.
Support comes from Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services, and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. BoydenandPerrin.com. The United Way of the Greater Capital Region, Albany, New York. Live United. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. UnitedWayGCR.org. And the Honest Weight Food Co-op, located at 100 Watervliet Avenue in Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty foods, and more. HonestWeight.coop. Sorry if you didn't make it through on the line. Thanks to Rich Guthrie. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Your phones were answered by our friend, Mary Vetter. That's right, Mary Vetter. We're done. Goodbye.